Great. Can we have my projector? Great. So this morning, we're going to start and finish with a bird in a wood burner. I've got a question for you. I've got a cave. I've got a football manager. I've got an ancient Jewish story about the relationship between a king and a soon-to-be king. I've got a Shakespeare play. Don't worry. I'm not a big Shakespeare fan, so it's going to be light. And I've got a piece of music, a new piece of music that I've recently discovered. So we're continuing our series on the life of David. And the title that I've been given this morning is Warrior and Fugitive. But I've decided to call this morning A Bird in a Wood Burner. A, because I really like titles. And particularly, I wouldn't say a good title, because I'm not sure if that's a particularly good title. But I like a quirky title. And well, the main reason for that, you will hopefully see in a moment. About 4 years ago, I heard an interview. You know Bear Grylls? Bear Grylls? Bear Grylls, I've always found him very interesting, very inspiring. Has anyone seen the recent one with Warwick Davis? If you haven't watched it, it's on catch-up. It's brilliant. It's really good. They're in the Lake District. I think they start just on the edge, up Fleetwood Pike. Fleetwood Pike, just on the edge of Buttermere there. It's absolutely fantastic. I've always found him very inspiring, very interesting. And a while ago, I saw an interview with him. I think it was it with, they were being interviewed by Piers Morgan, was it? And he was talking about his life story. And he was talking about just how much his father did with him in the outdoors. You know, they were jumping off cliffs, they were sliding here, they were walking here, they were camping there. And I felt very challenged when I heard that, just how much of that kind of thing am I doing with my own children, particularly my son, as like a father and son. So I came up with this idea of a lads and dads weekend. And way back, just myself and a mate of mine, we both took our sons. It was Phil Dore, he took Sammy, I took Ben, and we had a brilliant time. And the year after that, we grew it and did even more big group that year. And then the year after that, we were meant to be camping, and it was so wet. It was the opposite to how it is now. And in the end, we thought, we just can't do this. Ollie, I think you were going to come on that. We just thought we can't do it because this is going to put them all off for life, isn't it, to come and do this. Anyway, this year, I thought it was time to get back to the dads and lads weekend. And I've came across this idea of camping barns. Have you seen these camping barns? It's another way that farmers who perhaps have buildings that they're not using anymore might find some way to get some money out of them. So what they do is they convert them. Now, you have camping barns on this side of the spectrum, which are almost a little bit like cottages, but then you have camping barns right over here on this side of the spectrum. And Ollie, is Aidan gone out? Yes, Ollie was there. This was definitely on this side, wasn't it? Because all he'd done is just built this wooden platform as like an L shape around the edge of the barn, and there were just loads of old mattresses, and you just grabbed a mattress and you slept on this mattress. Anyway, we had this lads and dads of five dads with their sons, and we had an absolutely brilliant time. We went on a walk. We went on about a 10-mile walk, I think it was, and it was one of those really, really hot days. And we were absolutely exhausted, weren't we? We got to this one little point, and it was the most brilliant moment. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying this. We got to this tarn, and there was this big, is it Dale Head? Dale Head, I think, right ahead of us here. And we thought, do we climb up there and come round, or do we come back by the valley? And little Noah, Ollie's youngest son, just pootled up to me and said, Stuart, he said, I don't think I want to climb up there. And at that point, I made the decision, we're not climbing up there. And it was the best decision we made, because as we came back down the valley, none of you know the lakes, we went up the Catbells, we went up High Spy, Maiden Moor, dropped down, and then we came back down the valley. Is it the Newlands Round, the Newlands Valley? And what you've got there is actually, even in weather like this, water coming down, and you get these waterfalls with these big pools of water. Well, what do you do when you're boiling hot after a 10-mile walk, when you come across a big pool of water? You're in, aren't you? And we just kept coming across them, didn't we? And we kept on jumping in, and we had such a fantastic time. Anyway, Ben and I arrived before everyone else arrived. And we arrived at the camping barn and we checked it out and we got organized, got the barbecue ready. And then we just chucked these couple of mattresses down and we just both just lay down on this mattress because we were quite hot. And those buildings, those old buildings are brilliant, aren't they, for actually being quite cool. So we lay down in this camping barn. Now, I'm very pleased that there was no network signal because there was no Wi-Fi in the camping barn. Because if there had been a network signal, I'm sure my son would have called Child Action Line. Because how do you take him to a place, or why would you take him to a place where there was no Wi-Fi signal? So what do you do when there's no Wi-Fi signal? You play chess, don't you? Yeah? So we get the chessboard out because my son loves playing chess. And we start playing chess. And my son is much better than me at chess, so I just kind of humor him and he absolutely thrashes me at it. Anyway, we're playing this game of chess and suddenly we hear this. What was that? This tapping noise. Can anyone guess what the tapping noise might be? A bird and a wood burner. How did you know that? Did you hear that? That was a sparrow and a wood burner. It had come down the funnel because there was a wood burner in the corner, and it had obviously got stuck down this funnel. Anyway, we crept up to the wood burner and we opened up this wood burner. This bird must have been in here for long. It looked really dazed and tired. Anyway, it just hopped out of the wood burner. And I thought at that moment it's going to fly away, fly out. But it hopped underneath the wood burner. And we're thinking, oh man, what do we do now? So my son, it's just delightful. He has just got such a streak of kindness. I've got no idea where it came from. He's got such a streak of kindness. It's from you, Dad. Of course. Why didn't I think of that? So Ben has this idea that this bird needs some sustenance because clearly it's been in this wood burner for a long time with not very much to eat. So Ben, he's crunching on these Pringles and he thinks, Pringles? Well, of course, what else do you feed a bird but Pringles? So he goes out and he starts crunching the Pringles. But he doesn't just cut off big pieces of Pringles. He has tiny little bits of Pringles and spreads them out. And then we go back. And at this point, we couldn't play chess because we were so focused on the bird in the wood burner. And we sat there, and then suddenly, I say suddenly, quietly, this bird just bounced out, and you heard this. And it bounced back, and it came back again. And bounced back. And slowly, watching Ben, absolutely, it will stay with me forever as a father, captivated. He wasn't interested in the Dads and Lads weekend at this point. He wasn't interested in all the football they were going to play. It was all about the bird in the wood burner. And eventually, Ben has an idea. We need to open the door because presumably they'd fly out towards the light. So we open the big barn doors. And eventually, this bird flies out of the camping barn. You know, I was really, really struck right there at that moment at my son's passion to save this tiny little bird that he could have just ignored so easily or not really been very interested at all. That quality right there, I thought that's something I really want to grow in you, that care, that mercy, that genuine sense of... Oh, there's the Dads and Lads weekend. I meant to show you that. That was at the top of the camping. I didn't show you the picture in the town because you don't want to see that. Mercy. 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 Compassion or forgiveness shown towards someone or something whom it is within one's power to punish or harm. Mercy. 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 Here's the question for you. In a world that often shows little consistent, what I will call self-negating mercy, where you'd prefer to put yourself in a disadvantage, are we as followers of Jesus destined to become fugitives? Will there be times in our lives where there is no other path? Will there be times in our lives when we choose to become fugitives of mercy? Three questions. You know, I think we live in a world, don't we, that has great moments of great mercy. But I think very often in the day-to-day, it can feel like people are very, very quick to take advantage and take power, seize control, Or maybe, and this is the thing that keeps coming back to me, maybe deal what they think is right judgment with a sense of rightness. You know, they've asked for this. They've asked for this. They've done this, so I'm going to do that. Little mercy. Little mercy. Is it possible to be completely in the right, to be completely right, but at the same time be completely wrong? Is it possible to be completely right at a point, but at the precise same moment be completely wrong? You know, there's a strong theme of mercy that runs right through the Bible, isn't there? I love that prayer, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. The Beatitudes, blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. You know, let's be really clear. You know, we are incredibly dependent on the mercy of God. But I also believe we are incredibly dependent on the mercy of each other. The mercy of each other. Johnny, I wrote it down because I love so much what you said before. It says, standing in the gap between the way things are and the way things should be. Mercy. Maybe sometimes it takes mercy to stand in that gap. You know, I think it's pretty clear, isn't it, that living out a strong code of mercy will make us very popular with some people in some situations, but will maybe indirectly put us in a position of disadvantage when we refuse to play the game. You know, the media is a mixed bag, isn't it? It's full of different examples. This has been fascinating, hasn't it? The story of the caves, you've been following this. If you go on the BBC app, they've actually done this kind of, they use like drawings, but they talk you through the entire event, and it's absolutely fantastic. You've all seen this, have you? These children who got stuck, I think, about 2 miles into this cave. You know, the media loves acts of mercy, especially when it makes headlines. These children trapped in a cave. Did you know, by the way, why they had to go to hospital afterwards and we didn't get to see them for quite a while? I only discovered that recently. It's because they were so heavily sedated when they went through, because they were so worried that they were going to panic halfway through this journey. Because I think there were times where even the divers had to take off their tanks to be able to squeeze through the gaps, that the children were heavily sedated. And they were tied to the diver. So, of course, when they got them back, they had to take them to presumably some kind of intensive care to help bring them round. Fantastic story, wasn't it? People traveling all over the world. Tell me you've seen that video when they first see the boys walking down. If you haven't, just go on the BBC app. It's just an amazing moment of journalism. And here's the man. Gareth Southgate. You know, he's actually made himself incredibly popular, hasn't he? And this was a moment, I think, that the media really grabbed hold of, because when we played Colombia, it went to penalties, the dreaded penalties that England seemed to fail every time. And we actually won this penalty shootout. Whoever thought I'd be standing here saying that? And the guy from the Colombia team who missed the penalty, one of the first people that Gareth Southgate went to talk to embrace, was this guy. Because, of course, Gareth Southgate, when it was the European Championships, wasn't it, 96, he missed a penalty. Was it saved? Did it miss it? It was saved. So that's been a journey for him. It would have been so easy for Gareth Southgate. And, of course, he was excited, but to kind of almost revel in that. But there was a real act of mercy, wasn't there, and of kindness as he went to console the guy who'd missed the penalty. But we all know the media can be completely ruthless, can't it? But not so much that, but I think so much in the quiet day-to-day interactions of our lives. Not playing the power games can leave us, I think, in a distinct disadvantage at times, because that seems to be the way the world ticks. It's being prepared not to play the card in those power games, knowing that it will leave us in a weaker place. Knowing that it will leave us in a weaker place. It's sometimes not giving someone what we think they deserve. They've asked for it. They've asked for this. Like for like. They've done this to me, so I'm going to do this to them. That is not the way we rumble. I think it takes great character to show great mercy. So please, if you've got your Bibles, let's look at this ancient story. We're looking at 1 Samuel chapter 18, looking at verses 6 to 16, and the words will be on the screen. So this is just after killing Goliath. As they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, the women came out of the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines and with songs of joy and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated. Saul, that's the person who was king at that time, Saul has struck down his thousands, but David has struck his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they've ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom? There's a power struggle. And Saul eyed David from that day on. The next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, and as he did day by day, and Saul had his spear in his hand, and Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall, but David evaded him twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but he had departed from Saul. So Saul removed him from his presence and made him a commander of 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. And David had success in all his undertakings, for the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and came in before them. It's interesting, it repeats that phrase twice, doesn't it? And if you carry on through the book of 1 Samuel, you can see that David at this point becomes a fugitive. He chooses to become a fugitive because he could have seized power. And there was various times where he could, I think, have seized power, but he chose not to. He chose not to do that. And what seems clear, as I say, is he chooses this way when it was well within his grasp. Or maybe people would have said, it's right that you do this. But he doesn't grasp, but he shows Saul great mercy. Now, just a word on the warrior, because I was very kindly given the title warrior and fugitive. I think it was Mr. Lamin here who gave me that. Thank you very much. It's not easy, is it, when you read back in the Old Testament, all this killing and slaughtering. Seems a long way, doesn't it, from the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament. You know, it's very tempting to be a bit twee, if you like, and internalize it and say like, oh, well, we need to be warriors of justice or warriors of prayer or warriors of worship or warriors of football or warriors of whatever you need to be. But I think that's a mistake. I think that's a mistake. And I think that's a mistake a lot of perhaps Muslims might do about jihad, because that's what a lot of Muslims would say about jihad. It's not an outward fight, but it's an inward battle. It's not outward. And I think it's much better to face it a little bit more full on rather than trying to somehow explain it away. You know, Jesus doesn't seem to employ any kind of violent fighting talk, does he, in his teachings? And I think I would rather acknowledge that the world was in a very, very, very different place at that point, a very brutal place. And I also like to recognize, I've got my Bible here, that the Bible is a story, and it has a beginning, doesn't it? And it has an end here, and there's a lot of time that passes through that Bible. And the place where the people are over here is quite different from where the people are over here. And let me say, we would expect that, wouldn't we? Because if those people are no different from the people over here, we will say, well, what's all that about in the center? What's the point of all that? And I think there is a sense in which in the Bible we do see a progression where we see the teachings of Jesus, which seems to be quite different from what some of the things that we see in the Old Testament. But that doesn't undermine or value, because this is all God-breathed, and God can speak to us through any part of this. But I think equally, it's very, very difficult to pick up a passage in 1 Samuel chapter 18, lie next to a passage in Matthew chapter 15, and say they're doing exactly the same thing. Because in Matthew chapter 15, they're a lot further on, and God has been speaking to these people all this time through this Bible, which is great, isn't it? It's a story. It's like the story of our own lives. We don't want to be the same people here as we are over here. But this in no way undermines any of the bits here at the start. But I think that's quite obvious to me, really. So David becomes and chooses to become a fugitive by showing great mercy towards Saul, but not, if any of you are thinking about it, towards the Philistines. And I'm sure that would have come at some point. You know, Saul's interesting, isn't it? How can God's chosen become, how can you move from being almost like God's chosen to practically psychopathic tendencies towards the end of his life? How can someone travel from there to there? And I suspect there's a whole load of factors in the life of Saul. I suspect there were some mental health issues. Jealousy, as we see them being sown here, insecurity. And there's just that sense, isn't there, in Saul's life, that seeds have been sown of things that upset him and weren't right for him, that were never really resolved. The relationship between Saul and David becomes completely toxic, doesn't it? 1 Samuel 18, verse 9, Saul eyed David from that day on. I wonder if there's anyone here in this room who we had a moment in our lives and we've eyed somebody because they've done something to us, and to this day, we still do the same. 1 Samuel 18, 29, so Saul was David's enemy continually. You know, there are situations in our lives where we can be on the receiving end of this, aren't there? Where people set their hearts against you, and there doesn't ever seem to be any resolution. I could almost count on one hand the amount of times I have met someone where there just doesn't seem to be any way to resolve that. And it would seem to be that the resolution isn't possible because they have no interest or intention to resolve the problem. For them, they're quite happy to have that tension there. And it becomes very toxic. I would say personally, for me, in terms of my own mental stability, I'd say the times when those have been most difficult can sometimes be the darkest times, when you know that people have this kind of relationship with you, when you're desperate to find resolution. So the big question, isn't it? What do we do when we face situations like this? Because it can be very tempting to give like for like. Let's learn from this story. In this story, David refuses to give like for like. He shows great mercy and great kindness. And you know, sometimes I think it can be hard, either if you're feeling that towards someone or receiving it, it can be hard because you feel like you can't deal with that situation now and that's difficult. But maybe today you just show one act of mercy towards that person. And today has been a good day if that's what you've done. One act of mercy today. And then tomorrow do the same. And the day after do the same. And how do we deal with these things personally? Well, one thing that's really kind of helped me over the years, and I heard a quote from a podcast a while ago, and that is that forgiveness is given and not earned. Forgiveness is given and not earned. And if there is someone who has wronged you, then don't wait, you know, for them to put it right, because forgiveness is a gift. Forgiveness is not given. It's not earned, it's given. So sometimes I think the most powerful thing in the world is to give that forgiveness, even when circumstances wouldn't seem to warrant it. And the second thing is, I do believe it is okay to love people from a distance. Because I think if you do have someone in your life who is continually coming up to you and hurting you, then it is okay to love them from a distance. It is okay to love them from a distance. But we have this mercy, don't we? Mercy, mercy, mercy. What about that thought pattern that keeps going through your head? Maybe when you're standing in a shower where you're thinking about stuff and you think, whoa, wait, mercy. Show that person mercy in your heart. Mercy, mercy, mercy. Breaking the cycle. Something has to be profoundly right in the center of our hearts, I think, to be able to do this. Profoundly right. And that's why as Christians we believe that God enables us to show these acts of kindness and forgiveness and mercy. Mercy. When preparing for this morning, I discovered a piece of music by a composer called Max Richter. Some of you may know of Max Richter. Sorry, Richard, our rock and roll specialist. This is not Rolling Stones, but this is not Coldplay. Because Richard hates Coldplay, just as much as I hate in jokes, so I will tell you. This is a little bit more cheerful than Coldplay.
Most things are.
No, this isn't. You see, Richter takes a starting point from Porsche's famous lines in The Merchant of Venice. And what I'd like to do is play this music, and I'd like you, don't read it yet, I'm going to take it off. I'd like you to read this quote when we are listening to this music. And it is quite a sad, plaintive, mournful song. But I read recently, I think music like this can really amplify. I think sometimes when we come across music that can be quite mournful, I think it has a habit of picking things up within us. And if we're feeling sad or struggling with something, it can grow that. But it can also just help to bring things out, I think. So I'd like to play this music to you, and I apologize if it is quite, but I love this piece of music. And the piece of music is called Mercy. So let's play this piece of music. It's about 3-4 minutes long, and then I'll just a few words, and then we'll finish.
Thank you.
right, Richard. No, you're not right. There's two characters in this story. We've got Saul, consumed by bitterness, jealousy, darkness, these festering seeds, unresolved issues. David, forthright in doing the right thing. And I suspect it wasn't the easy decision. He became a fugitive. And I've been struck by these words. Also struck by the potential I have of becoming either of these people in terms of trajectory. Saul feeling wronged, feeling insecure, feeling jealous, becoming a difficult and negative person. Seeds just boiling, growing in our lives. This phrase here is repeated twice about David. He went out and came in before the people. Wasn't hiding in the background, was he? Boldly doing the right thing, leading the people in these qualities. Standing out, even when it leads to short-term problems and disadvantage. Maybe there are times when we have to wait for the Lord. So may we show mercy, even when this leads to disadvantage and difficulty. And with this quality in plain sight, may it be said of us that we went out and we came in before the people with this quality, that we stand in the gap. May we always be people who would rescue the bird and the wood burner. I'd like to close with a word on the back, and I thought I had my service sheet. Yes, I do. If you've got a service sheet, let's turn to the back there. Steve has very kindly printed that on the back. Let's finish with his words, Psalm 27. I think we will have just that one song, Johnny, if that's all right. I Will Wait would be great. Yeah. Wait For You, is it? Yeah, that'd be great. I'm going to read these words to close. We think, by the way, that these words were written at this time in David's life when he was a fugitive. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is my stronghold, is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Teach me your way, O Lord. Lead me in a straight path because of my oppressors. I am still confident of this, that I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. I will wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait. Wait for the Lord. Amen. Grace to you and peace.